Narada Uvacha. The great sage Narada continued to speak. Sainika, the soldiers, Bhaya Namna, of Bhaya, fear. Ye, all of them who? Barhishman, O King Pratini Barhishat. Dishtakarina, the order carriers of death. Prajvara, with Prajvara. Kalakanyadhyam, and with Kalakanya. Vicheruhu, traveled. Avanim, on earth. Imam, this. Translation. The great sage Narada continued, My dear King Prachina Baharshat, afterward, the king of the Yavanas, whose name is Fear itself, as well as Prajvara, Kalakanya, and his soldiers, began to travel all over the world. Please repeat. The great sage Narada continued. My dear King Prachina Baharshat, afterward, the king of the Yavanas, whose name is Fear itself, as well as Prajvara, Kalakanya, and his soldiers, began to travel all over the world. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The period of life just prior to death is certainly very dangerous, because usually at this time, people are attacked by the weakness of old age, as well as many kinds of disease. The diseases that attack the body are compared here to soldiers. These soldiers are not ordinary soldiers, for they are guided by the king of the Yavanas, who acts as their commander-in-chief. The word Dishtakarina indicates that he is their commander. When a man is young, he does not care for old age, but enjoys sex to the best of his satisfaction, not knowing that at the end of life, his sexual indulgence will bring on various diseases, which so much disturb the body that one will pray for immediate death. The more one enjoys sex during youth, the more he suffers in old age. So, I beg the permission of my god uncles, Samika Rishi Prabhu, Lakshmi Nisringa Prabhu, temple president, and so forth, please give me permission to say something on Srimad Bhagavatam and bless me that I will say something valuable. We've heard now from Srila Prabhupada some very blunt statements. I know that generally, especially in the culture in India, we do not speak so much on the topics of sex. The very word is kind of something to be avoided. However, here we are studying the condition of the living entity in the material world, and there are facts of life, are there not? There are reasons that the living entity is conditioned, and the chief reason is the desire to enjoy the material energy, and the golden shackles that keep the living entity in this material world consists of sex attraction. When the living entity comes into this world, Krishna says, Ichcha dvesha sumutena dvandva mohina bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sargayanti parantapa. He's covered. He's bewildered. He's covered by the dualities of desire and hate. And therefore his vision is one of duality. Rich, poor, black, white, man, woman. So a man is attracted to a woman and a woman is attracted to a man. And through this attraction, so much entanglement comes about. The entire thrust of the Vedic system of advancement, of spiritual advancement, the entire thrust is to relieve us, free us from this enjoying propensity, to this propensity to enjoy matter separate from Krishna, to free us from this vision of duality. That's the entire thrust of the message of the Vedas. Because in order to go back home, back to Godhead, in order to awaken your original spiritual consciousness, you have to become free from this, these attachments, and this covered understanding. This misidentification. The misidentification doesn't stop with this body. It extends outward. Right? In family life, I consider this living entity to be my wife, these living entities to be my children, those living entities to be my parents and grandparents, these living entities to be my city or community or country. All attachment, misidentification. All misidentification. Why? They're there. I have a country. I have children. I have parents. They're all there. They're real. Yes, but temporary. Temporary. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna tells us that it's an illusion to see this living entity as simply a child, or this living entity as an old man, because he gives the example of water in the river. The water is constantly flowing past. It's never standing in one spot in a moment, and yet we will stand there and say, this is the water of the river. But it's moving past constantly. So these bodies are constantly changing. Constantly, at every moment. When you breathe in, living entities are leaving their bodies every moment. Just by your breath. Sometimes the Jains, they try to avoid this. Put the mask. Because they know. This is happening. So the body is constantly changing, and yet we're identifying. Oh, I'm 58 years old. What is that? As soon as you've said that, it's no longer, it's like, the body that you were speaking of at that moment has now changed, imperceptibly. Such is the force of time. The change is there, it's going on all the time, but it's so subtle. To the ordinary mind, it's imperceptible. We can't see. I have a friend, a very dear friend, who is coming here to leave his body in Sri Vrindavan Dham. 2 years ago, perfect health, strong, you know, clear, now still clear, but body is in short time, decrepit. Sometimes we're parted from friends and associates for a number of years, and then we see them again and, oh, hi, Bo, Prabhu. Oh, it's 15 or 20 more wrinkles there. It just happens. And yet, if I was to stand there and watch you, or you were to watch me, or I was to look in the mirror, I can't see what's going on. But it's going on. So this is the force of time. It's the force of time. And an intelligent living entity should, by hearing from the Vedic literatures, by hearing from the pure representative of Krishna, and by associating with the devotees, they can come to this platform of knowledge to understand, aha, I'm not this body, I'm the pure soul, I'm the living entity within. Otherwise, as stated by Lord Rishabhadev, Nunam pramata kurute vikarma yad indriya pritya apranoti nasaru manyayata atmanoyam asan apikleshada asadeha. When we're after sense gratification, when we're in this dual consciousness of considering some objects to be for my sense gratification, some objects repulsive, and the whole business is to enjoy, the living entity becomes mad. Lord Rishabhadev says he's pramatta, he's crazy. He's crazy. And he doesn't understand, Lord Rishabhadev says, that because of his desire to enjoy, he's been awarded this body. And he shouldn't have even taken this body, but because he's addicted to sense gratification, he's been required to. He's acquired this body according to activities, desires from previous life. He's got this life. And similarly, according to his activities and desires in this life, he gets another body. Lord Rishabhadev says, this isn't that an intelligent man should not involve himself again in the desires and activities of sense gratification by which he perpetually gets these material bodies one after another. So how not to do that? I have to eat, I have to sleep, defense is sometimes a requirement, sex is sometimes a requirement for the living entity. How is it possible? Because these things are binding. Yes, they're binding. Unless one controls the senses and uses them in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pure representative, absolutely correct, they're binding. And one is guaranteed to get another material body of some sort. Of some sort. One of 8,400,000 species of life. Lots of choices. But unfortunately, in the conditioned state, the living entity driven by the three modes of nature hardly even knows that there is a choice, because he's so consumed with the consciousness of enjoying this life that for all intents and purposes, a future existence is imagination for him. Imagination. Prabhupada gave the two terms Shreya and Preya. Shreyas is long activities with a long-range vision in mind. What will come about as a result of my activities now, ahead in the future? Prayas is activities with a consciousness of immediate enjoyment. Enjoy now. Make merry today, for tomorrow we die. Right? That's prayas. Shreyas is, let me try to understand my position. This body is growing old. This body is going to become diseased. This body is going to fall down. Therefore, let me understand what is beyond this material body. Let me understand who I am within this body. I'm the same person who was there in the body of a child, the same person, the same observer now in the body of an older man. And according to Krishna, I will continue to exist. So we hear from the Acharyas, we hear from Bhagavad Gita to understand these points. Now here, we're beginning a new chapter in the allegorical life of King Paranjana, as explained by Narada Muni to King Prachina Bharajat. And of course the chapter name is revealing. Paranjana, our allegorical hero, is going to take birth as a woman in his next life. There's a nice passage in Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, which talks about this situation of the living entity. It's Lord Kapila Dev's instructions to Devahuti, and the chapter is 31, his instructions on the movements of the living entities. And Lord Kapila Dev says, a living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. The purport is very informative. Purport. From this verse, it appears that a woman is also supposed to have been a man in his, her, previous life. And due to his attachment to his wife, he now has the body of a woman. Bhagavad Gita confirms this. A man gets his next life's birth according to what he thinks of at the time of death. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajityante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kantiya sadatad bhava bhavataha. Whatever you think about at the time of death, that state you will attain without fail, Krishna says. Very clear. There's no question. Without fail, he says. Similarly, if a woman thinks of her husband at the time of death, naturally she gets the body of a man in the next life. In the Hindu scriptures, therefore, woman's chastity and devotion to man is greatly emphasized. A woman's attachment to her husband may elevate her to the body of a man in her next life. But a man's attachment to a woman will degrade him. And in his next life, he will get the body of a woman. We should always remember, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, that both the gross and subtle material bodies are dresses. They are the shirt and coat of the living entity. To be either a woman or a man only involves one's bodily dress. The soul in nature is actually the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. That's his actual position. Every living entity being classified as energy is supposed to originally be a woman, or one who is enjoyed. In the body of a man, there is a greater opportunity to get out of the material clutches. There is less opportunity in the body of a woman. In this verse, it is indicated that the body of a man should not be misused through forming an attachment to women and thus becoming too entangled in material enjoyment, which will result in getting the body of a woman in the next life. A woman is generally fond of household prosperity, ornaments, furniture, and dresses. She is satisfied when the woman supplies all these things sufficiently. The relationship between man and woman is very complicated. But the substance is that one who aspires to ascend to the transcendental stage of spiritualization should be very careful in accepting the association of a woman. In the stage of Krishna consciousness, now this next sentence is very important. It's very important, especially for those who would, as men, look down on women, especially women Vaishnavas. Listen to this next sentence very carefully. In the stage of Krishna consciousness, however, such restriction of association may be slackened. Because if a man's and woman's attachment is not to each other but to Krishna, then both of them are equally eligible to get out of the material entanglement and reach the abode of Krishna. But this is the condition. They have to be really attached to the service of Krishna. Their attachment for each other has to be as fellow servants of Krishna. This is an important point. As it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, anyone who seriously takes to Krishna consciousness, whether in the lowest species of life, or a woman, or of the less intelligent classes, such as the mercantile or laborer class, will go back home, back to Godhead, and reach the abode of Krishna. A man should not be attached to a woman, nor should a woman be attached to a man. Both man and woman should be attached to the service of the Lord. Krishna, the service of the Lord. Attachment to Krishna means attachment to the service of the Lord. That's how you manifest your attachment. It's one thing to say, I love Krishna. Oh, Krishna is so wonderful. I'm always thinking, but how do you show that love? You do something for Krishna. That is the actual test. Prabhupada said that the real test of spiritual advancement is how free we are of sex desire. Because in order to be free of sex desire, you have to be attached to Krishna. You have to have Krishna desire. You have to carry Krishna's desire in your heart. You have to be always looking to see what will make Krishna happy, not what will make my senses titillated. That's the way, the angle of vision changes that way. And it's only possible by the mercy of a pure devotee. Otherwise, as Prahlad Maharaj says, Matir na Krishne paratosvatova. That practically, any interest or inclination to Krishna is impossible for the living entity. Either by his own endeavors or by the instructions of others, he's so absorbed. Hare Krishna, Jai Shri Shri Gaurita, Jai Shri Radha Shyama Sundara, Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram. So absorbed in trying to enjoy the material energy that he's not inclined. He's inclined to enjoy the senses. So we aspire for this platform. We bring that. This human form of life is not meant for material enjoyment. It is meant for tapasya. The very first living entity in this world, Lord Brahma, heard two words. Actually, the same word repeated twice. Tapa, tapa. That's what human life is for. It's not for material enjoyment. There's a conversation with Srila Prabhupada where he talks about this. This is a Srimad Bhagavatam lecture. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.3. This is a verse which describes how the attached materialist householder, he passes his day trying to earn money like anything, and at night sleeping in sex indulgence. And this is a description. Prabhupada says, Vyavayena Chava Vaya. Vyavaya means sex life. So, Vyavayena Chava Vaya. The Vaya. Vaya means duration of life. How long your life is. The more you indulge in sex life, your duration of life is reduced. That is the scientific method. Therefore, the yogis, they give up sex life. It is a very great science. The breathing. During sex life, there is more breathing. So the more you misuse your breathing, your duration of life is reduced. And if you can preserve this breathing, then you can increase your duration of life. Why people are dying nowadays 50 years, 60 years, 70 years? No. One should live for at least 100 years. But because they unduly indulge in sex life, they die early. Their duration of life is reduced. So this is the position. The breathing. I heard one lecture, Srila Prabhupada's talking about this very point. And he imitates the breathing person. He's engaging in sex. The devotees kind of laugh nervously. This is the position. Another time in a class in Melbourne, Australia, Srila Prabhupada talked about how it is very good for spiritual life if the disciple completely refrains from sex life up to the 25th year. And then Prabhupada looked out and there were a few like downcast faces. Because disciples are coming from the West, so much sex life was there, they're kind of... And Prabhupada then he said, but by chanting Hare Krishna, everything will be alright. Everything will be alright. So, Prahlad Maharaj also says, Kama Acharit Pragyo, Dharma Bhagavatani Ha, that from the very beginning of life, from an intelligent person, from the moment of understanding the urgency of the matter, one should engage in full Krishna consciousness, not waiting, not thinking, I will enjoy now. I will enjoy sexual relations. I will enjoy unlimited. But I know Krishna. I know who Krishna is. And then when I'm a little older, I'm a little calmer, then maybe I will give to Bhagavan. But that's not how it works. This is a cheating mentality. Later on I will serve Krishna. Right now I will enjoy. Because you'll get entangled. And then when you're older, you'll say, oh, it's so hard, I'm tired. I don't really feel like it. And why? Why you will not have this determination? Because of engaging in sex life. Because by engaging in sex life, one's determination, one's health, one's fortitude, one's ability to focus, all of these things become reduced. In the Ayurveda, there's a substance, a very subtle substance called ojas. Anyone heard of ojas? Ojas. It's actually, our doctor can confirm, he has some Ayurvedic knowledge. This ojas is actually a transformation from semen, which is retained in the body. Therefore, the great sages who are naistika brahmachari, never expending semen, they're referred to as urdhvaretasa. The semen is flowing upwards. It changes into this ojas. And the ojas nourishes the entire, it makes the entire organism very, very strong. Very strong. These yogis that are controlling their breath, they're also controlling the rest of their senses. And Prabhupada says they live sometimes 300, 700 years. Just like many of our devotees are at the Kumbh Mela. And I remember reading years ago that Prabhupada said that there are yogis who come here who are hundreds of years old, but they look like young men. Because they're able to control their breathing to such a point and bring their senses under such fine control that they can live like this. Very extended period. The goal of life, of course, is not to live a really long time, but to bring the senses under control so that one can properly engage in the service of Krishna. If we can do that much in this life, then that's a great accomplishment. Bring the senses under control. How do you do that, though? How can you bring the senses under control? This material energy, especially right now in Kali Yuga, it's getting more and more crazy, isn't it? Just like recently, there's been a big uproar in the Indian, there's uproar everywhere, but particularly in this country with the rape of this woman off the bus and so much, you know, it's brought attention to this very subject, sex and what's licit sex and what's illicit sex. And of course, this is a very crude and gross example of illicit sex. But these things are going on all the time, whether in India or other countries. Children are being abused. Children are being abused. It's a shame. It's a disgrace. But what is that? It's because people have uncontrolled senses. They haven't developed their God consciousness, their Krishna consciousness. It's because they associate with other people who are like that, who have uncontrolled senses, and who encourage them, or who abuse them, and then they become abusers. It's just a mess. So how to get out of this mess? You take shelter of the devotees, of a pure devotee of Krishna, who himself has extricated himself from this mess, whose senses are under control, who's always remembering Krishna and never forgetting him. The great example of such a pure devotee is His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Privrajagacharya Stotara Satta Sri Srimad A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Prabhupada was a family man. Prabhupada had children. But he only engaged to produce children and no more. And then when the time was right for him to continue the instruction of his, carry the instructions of his spiritual master to the Western world, he did just that. It is possible to stop. There's an example in Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto. Maharaja Yati. Yati was a big sense enjoyer. Big sense enjoyer. So much so that when he was cursed by the great sage Sukracharya to become old, he went to his sons to he got a concession. He pleaded with Sukracharya. It's a long story. We don't need to go into all the details, but he pleaded with Sukracharya, please, you know, have mercy on me. This, don't make this, you know, my final situation. And Sukracharya said, all right, if you can find someone, one of your sons, who will accept your old age, then you can have back your youth. So adamant was Maharaja Yati about enjoying this body, enjoying with his wife Devayani, that he went to his sons. Some of them refused him. This excuse, that excuse. He was very angry with them. But Puru, he accepted. All right, I will accept your old age. Yati gave him his old age. He regained his youth and he went back to his material enjoyment for a long time. But finally, his detachment and his attachment for Krishna, his detachment for material enjoyment, his attachment for Krishna awoke. And once it awoke, he never looked back. He says something very interesting. Once this awakens, he gives instructions to his wife, Devayani. They're very nice instructions. There's one verse where he describes the situation of the relation of man and woman. It's a famous verse, probably quoted in many, many Bhagavatam classes. Nan vagni pramada nama gritakumba samapuman sutamapi rahojayad anyada yavat artakrit. The word for describing woman here in this verse is pramada. Pramada means one who bewilders the mind of a man. This is how the woman is described. She is like Agni. She's like fire. Right? And the man, he's like Gritakumba. Gritakumba. Butter pot. He's like a butter pot. So you bring the fire to the butter pot, what happens? It is melting. So Yayati was in this melted state for a long time. Long time. But finally he came to his senses. And he said, therefore, because this is the situation, because the man and the woman, when they combine, this change takes place. And so much attachment, and so much entanglement, and so on. Therefore, because this is the nature of things, therefore, a man should be careful not to sit in a secluded place, even with his own daughter, even with his own, sutam api rahojaya, raho means in a secluded place, jayad means not to associate with, sutam means daughter, sutam api rahojayad, anyada yavat artakrit, and any, actually, this is Narada Muni instructing Maharaj Yudhisthira, I'm sorry. There's another verse. In any case, compared to fire, man is compared to butter. And furthermore, it's said that therefore, one should associate, otherwise, similarly, he should also avoid association with other women. The man should be like this strict. He should, not only should he be careful, even with other women, he should avoid association. And how should he associate? For important business, and that only, not otherwise. And this instruction by Narada Muni is being given not just to brahmacharis, because it's in a chapter called The Four Orders of Spiritual Life. And it's right at the trail end of a series of instructions for brahmacharis. But then the next verse talks about this is applicable equally to the other ashrams. One has to be controlled. He has to be self-controlled. One has to, and this is tapasya. It's tapasya. It means, in another play, in a lecture, Prabhupada says, tapasya means, I have desire for sex life, but this is not the right time. I will refrain. That's what he says, as an example of tapasya. So human life is actually meant for this. Tapo divyam putraka yena satvam, Maharaj Rishabhadev says. It's meant for this divine austerity, not just some crazy austerity, you know? Like you'll see, some people, they'll just do austerity for austerity's sake. Or they'll do austerity to gain some material power. Or they'll use austerity in order to gain political control. No, divine austerity. Austerity meaning, tapasya meaning, controlling the senses for the purpose of satisfying the Lord. Yeah. Sex life and Krishna consciousness or spiritual life go ill together. Therefore, there is concession for sex life in the Grihastha ashram, but that concession is also boxed. It's under limitations, right? So follow those limitations. Sometimes Prabhupada would say, in preaching, he would say, yes, sex life only within marriage. At other times, especially you read in the pages of Bhagavatam, he's very particular. If you want to be a Pukka Vaishnava and you're a householder, sex only for procreation and only at the proper time for conception and only when attempting this once a month, no more. This is strict Vaishnava. So, otherwise, the entanglement will be there. One will have to... One will be forced by material desire to accept another birth. Daiva netrena. The demigods will arrange. They're arranging right now. As your body changes, your next body is being determined right now. With each breath, with each activity, with each desire, that next body is determined. In one place, Prabhupada says that death is the point at which the demigods have decided what your next body will be. That is then death. So, let's all give the demigods something more to think about than just propelling us to another material body. By engaging, there are wonderful instructions given by Yamaraj to the Yamadutas. The Yamadutas, they've arrested Ajamil. You read about it in 6th Canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. They've arrested Ajamil. Ajamil had training early on as a Brahmin, but because he became attracted upon seeing a display of sexual activity by a low-born man and woman, he became very attracted. And in the fire of lust, he became forgetful and just fell down and became the most debauched personality. He had many children. One of them he named Narayan. So in his overripe old age, when he was leaving his body, he called out for his son, Narayan, Narayan! The Yamadutas were on their way to grab him, take him. Very frightening personalities, the Yamadutas. They're order carriers of Yamaraj. But they were interrupted by Vishnudutas from Siddhalok. The Vishnudutas said, you can't take him. And there's an interesting exchange between the Yamadutas and Vishnudutas. The Yamadutas are frustrated in their purpose. Their purpose is to grab the sinful living entity, drag him. You read in 3rd Canto, Lord Kapiladeva's instructions, what it's like for the sinful living entity to be dragged, something like 700,000 yojanas or some horrible... anyway, he's dragged to the court of Yamaraj. In a matter of seconds, he suffers, however, along the entire route. And then he's judged for his sinful activities, and then he has to go to hell for so long before he can take another gross material body. He has to suffer in a subtle material body. This is not allegorical. This story of Paranjana, this is allegorical. But having to suffer reactions for one's sinful activities is not allegorical. It's a fact. And in order to emphasize this fact, Shukadeva Goswami tells Maharaj Pariksit that you can see evidence for hell even on this planet. Isn't it? So there are hellish planets, and the living entities have to suffer. And Ajamil, by all rights and purposes, should have ended up there. But where did he go? He was free. He was liberated. Now, why did this take place? So the Yamadutas are frustrated. They go to Yamaraj, and in their questioning Yamaraj, Prabhupada mentions that their mood is, well, you know, we were under the impression that you were the supreme in control of everyone, and it appears now that maybe you're not. So they're a little upset, and they mention the name Narayan to Yamaraj, and Yamaraj is a devotee, and he immediately becomes happy. Oh, he's spoken the name of my Lord. So he speaks these wonderful verses. And among those verses, he says, you bring me these sinful rascals who are addicted to sex life, who are addicted to enjoying their senses like anything, but don't touch the devotees, don't even go near them. If someone is, that they're in one place, 100% dedicated to the service of the Lord, I have no jurisdiction over him. Don't disturb them, but bring me all these other fools and rascals. So it's heavy, isn't it? It's very, very, very heavy. But this is, Yamaraj has his duty to perform. And it's actually in the best interest of the living entity that he go through this punishment to become purified for some of his sinful activities and also to get prepared for his next body. Because when one goes to the court of Yamaraj and he has to accept some of the results of his sinful reactions, sometimes, and practically speaking in Kali Yuga, often what is happening is he's being prepared for a lower birth in the next life. Not even human birth. So this Krishna consciousness movement is going to save you from taking that lower birth. Just take to it seriously. It can save you from taking a lower birth. That's the minimum benefit. In this life, Prabhupada told his disciples, if you follow these four regular principles, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, if you chant your 16 rounds every day, minimum 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you will go back to Godhead at the end of this life. It is guaranteed. He said, just give this one life. Just give this one life. You've had so many lifetimes to do this other thing. And sometimes you've been in the body of a demigod. Sometimes you've been in the body of a worm in stool. Sometimes, and on rare occasions, you come to the human form of life. Very rare occasions. So take advantage. Those of us in this, many of us in this life, we had the misfortune of spending quite a few years in total ignorance and pursuing the enjoyment of our senses like madmen, pramatta. But somehow, by the mercy of the lotus feet of the spiritual master, we had a little bit of an awakening. And Prabhupada was telling his disciples, many of whom they joined when they were 18, 19, 21, 25, head hanging low, thinking about all those years wasted. He told them, you do these things, simple formula, back to Godhead at the end of this life. So our appeal to everyone, because you all, in this age of Kali Yuga, everyone has Lord Chaitanya's mercy. There's one place I was reading an exchange, actually it was a letter, Srila Prabhupada was replying to one of his sannyasi disciples, and by the context of the letter, you can understand what the disciples questioned. What had to do with, you know, hearing these other people chant Hare Krishna. What about them, Srila Prabhupada? Prabhupada says in the letter, essentially what he said is, they are imitating us. So they are connected. So Prabhupada was saying, they're getting mercy. So what to speak of if you actually take this philosophy very seriously. Very seriously. And you apply the regular principles, you perform this tapasya, little tapasya compared to previous ages. and you chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with great fervor and ecstasy and intensity every day, then at the end of this life it is guaranteed. In this life you'll see the progress. No doubt. No doubt you'll see the progress. You'll feel that progress. You'll become more enthused, and at the end of this life, you'll go back to Godhead. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions? Hare Krishna. Yes. Is there a microphone? No? Okay. You just speak up. Well, it's a good question. It's stated, you can find in various places in the Shastra, where the body of the man is considered superior to the body of the woman. Doesn't it kind of sound like these are biased statements written by men who want to control, who want to assert their superiority? It's you find many statements in the Shastra that the man's body is superior to that of a woman. At least for performing tapasya, for spiritual life and so forth, it's superior. Therefore, there aren't these just kind of statements concocted by men or spoken by men who want to control women. The man's body is more, Prabhupada just mentioned it, didn't we? We just read from third canto. The body of a man is more conducive for spiritual practices, for performing tapasya. Well, you just have to look practically. I mean, the woman bears children. The woman's body by nature tends to be more frail than that of a man. The man has physically, and to a certain degree mentally, has more facility. But Prabhupada also mentioned in that purport, and that's where I was drawing attention to, that a man and a woman practicing Krishna consciousness and attached to the lotus feet of Krishna have equal opportunity. Otherwise, by material estimation, yeah, there are differences. There are practical differences. Unfortunately, we sometimes take the statements of Shastra out of context, or we twist them to do it exactly as you say. But one can twist anything for his own nefarious, contaminated purpose. It's also said that traditionally the woman should be under the shelter of a man throughout her life, right? Under the shelter of the father when she's a child, under the shelter of a husband in her youth and in her marriage years, and under the shelter of a good son in her old age. But that shelter means protection. It means loving care. It doesn't mean beating. It doesn't mean rape. It means protection. Throughout the world, something else is done. Not just here, but all over the world. There's big... Anyway, we don't need to mention in front of the deities, but there are all of these anomalies present. Because men have become irresponsible. There's a statement near the beginning of Bhagavad Gita talking about irresponsible men. They produce all these Varna Sankara children at the risk of creating calamity throughout the world. So be responsible. If you have a wife under your care, treat her with affection and kindness, and remember always that she is a servant of Krishna. She's spirit soul. She's not a vehicle merely for your whim and sense gratification. And then you'll see the family relationship will be very nice, because she will see that you respect her in that way, that you are seeing her on the spiritual platform. The relationship in Krishna consciousness of a man and a woman is very nice. It's very nice. It should be. It should be. Because it's on the spiritual platform. Prabhupada even goes to the point in that verse that I read from third canto to say that the strictures of man, woman, division and separation and so forth, they can be somewhat slackened in the Krishna conscious relationship. Because Krishna is the center. But keep Krishna in the center. You know? Is that alright? But just one more point. These scriptures, they're coming from Bhagavan. They're not the writing of some man who has a vendetta against women. Yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna,
no,
Bhaji.
I said Mataji.
Thank you very much, Prabhuji, for your lecture. I have one question about attachment. Could you tell a little bit about duality? When we hear this kind of lecture, I started, because of my mind, conditions of mind, I started to hate something. But in my experience, I understand that it's not good. Because of my hating, I have same attachment. At the end, the result is the same. When I'm loving something in material and hating and giving at the end, same results.
Yes, yes. Very nice. Yeah, that's a fact. Prabhupada gave that as an example. He said attachment and aversion, or love and hate, they're two sides of the same coin of material attachment. When I'm repulsed by something, there's also some hint of lingering attachment. I mean, there's a famous verse by Sri Jamunacharya, right? Yadavari mama cheta krishna padara vinde nava navarasa damani yutam brantamasi tadavari batanari sangame smaryamani bhavati mukhavikar sustu nischivanamcha. And now that I'm engaged in the blissful service of the lotus feet of Krishna, that and experiencing ever new rasa, ever new mellows in his service, whenever I happen to think of sex life, my lips curl in distaste and I spit. Prabhupada said, spite, I spite on it. So that's a stage, but to have that kind of repulsion also indicates that there's something still there. It suggests it. I'm not saying that's the case in Sri Jamunacharya, but the idea is attachment, aversion. So we should, when we experience attachment and aversion, we should do exactly as you did, Mataji, and we should say, okay, what is this? And study it in light of the Shastra and in light of the instructions of the spiritual master. I'm aversion. Suppose I'm hearing women are, you know, less intelligent than men. Ugh. How can they say that, you know? I've been in this movement 25 years, they're saying, why are they saying that? You know, or there's a statement in Bhagavad Gita about how women, sudras, the mercantile class, yapashritya, how does that verse run? Yapashritya. Sriya Vaishasatashritya, tepi yanti paramgatim. That even they can approach the supreme destination. One time Jayadvaita Swami was asked about this. The woman was very upset. She said, you know, they're grouping us with the Shudras and the Vaishyas, Striya Vaishyas, Tashudras, persons who are sinful. They're putting us with them. And Jayadvaita Swami said, evidently you missed the first part of Bhagavad Gita about not being that body. You have to go back and read, you know, the previous chapters. Then you can understand these statements. Materially, there are differences, you know. And as long as we're in to a certain degree in material consciousness, these things will come. Attachment and aversion they'll color our consciousness sometimes. But we shouldn't be afraid. We shouldn't be in anxiety. We should be detached enough and informed enough by hearing Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita that we recognize. If you hear, I guarantee you, if you hear Bhagavad Gita or read and hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita every day, when these things arise, and they will, you'll have the volition to recognize them. You know? You may be a little disturbed, but then you'll see, oh, that's what that is. Okay. Hare Krishna. And then you'll become like Yayati. Yayati, it says in the Bhagavatam, he became detached from all material desires within a moment by the mercy of Krishna. So maybe it takes us a little while, but when you think about it, this short life of 100 or now 50, 60, 70 years is very short. And in one sense, it's kind of like a moment, isn't it? So utilize this moment. Be happy. Anyone else? Yes, Sami Karishi. Well, I'm just loud. Yes. Yes. This is a very good... Salaka Rishi has pointed out that this Alzheimer's disease, which is now rampant in the West, is primarily a product of illicit sex. I was looking at statistics on this. It's interesting. Our minds go on the same line. I was thinking about this very subject. In a matter of a few short years, maybe 10 years, there will be 30 million Alzheimer's cases in the United States alone. 30 million. The government is in a somewhat of a panic, thinking, how will our society be able to take care of all these people? Because in that condition, there's so much care required. A person can't take care of themselves. You know, every once in a while you'll read about such and such person wandering off. They get so confused and bewildered, they don't know where they are. It's such a sad condition. So, then there were statistics of Alzheimer's patients in different countries. And the United States, where the others, India's small. Small. But you will have your share if this country continues imitating the West, continues opening up meat establishments, liquor shops, all these activities which lead to agitation of the senses for sex life. You will have your boatload of Alzheimer's patients too. Rest assured. This Krishna consciousness movement is the only movement that can stem the tide of Kali Yuga and all of these inauspicious incidents. This is the only thing that can change that. Because it's the only movement that can genuinely elevate the consciousness of the living entity to a truly transcendental situation, love of God. Any other comments or questions? Yes.